Election College, Episode 191, Franklin Pierce, Part 1.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Jason, there was part of us, or at least part of me, that thought, let's just skip this episode, this president, because he's one of the most uninspiring and uninspired, at least from the viewpoint of history, looking back, presidents we've ever had. And it's just kind of like, what do we really want to talk about this guy?
Yeah, it's rough. And our apologies to everyone in New Hampshire, because this is your president. And I mean, he was everybody's president, but yeah. You know, there's a certain amount of pride that you take when a president comes from your state. And I think there's a lot of things going on in that mind of Franklin Pierce. And
yeah.
Buck up, kids, because this is going to be a rough ride. The next two episodes are going to be a little rough. But history isn't all roses and sunshine and lollipops. And I got that out of order.
Yeah. And don't get us wrong, we'll get into this, so you'll see, but I don't think that he was any less of a thinker or an intelligent person than any of our other presidents. He just had a lot of things going against him and made some slip-ups and had some bad things happen to him in the process. And I mean, we would disagree with some of his decisions, of course, but he wasn't an idiot, I don't think. So don't hear us wrong there. But anyway, Franklin Pierce, he was born on November 23rd, 1804. And, you know, if you're born in the early 1800s and you're going to be the president, why not be born in a log cabin? Because that
exactly.
seems to make some sense. He was born in New Hampshire, like Jason mentioned.
Yeah. And he was a descendant of Thomas Pierce, hence the Pierce last name. Doesn't mean you all have to be related to him if your last name is that, but he just so happened to be actually related to Thomas Pierce, who was from the Massachusetts Bay Colony, and they had immigrated from England, from Norfolk, England, around the year 1634. So they've been over here for a while. And Pierce's dad, his name was Benjamin, he was a lieutenant during the Revolutionary War. He came from Massachusetts and decided, New Hampshire, that's a great place. I'm going to buy 50 acres of land and settle down with my wife, who tragically passed away during childbirth. So a second wife, they decided, let's settle down here on our 50 acres in beautiful New Hampshire.
Franklin's dad, Benjamin, was a pretty prominent politician. He was a Democratic Republican, and he was also a farmer. And he kept the bar, so he had quite a bit of stuff going on. And while his dad was involved in politics, also two of his older brothers fought in the War of 1812, and so Franklin Pierce is exposed to a lot of political talk, a lot of love for country, a lot of the happenings of the day, really, because his family was intricately involved in them. And so all through school, Franklin wasn't really a huge fan of school, but he went nonetheless, just, you know, because he was supposed to. And it ends up after he gets done with his schooling, he decides he wants to go and read law. And hey, who would have guessed it? He ends up going to law school. He spends only a semester in Northampton Law School in Massachusetts, and then he studies under Judge Edmund Parker in New Hampshire. He gets admitted to the bar, of course, and loses his first case, but hey, he becomes a pretty good lawyer after that. And he starts to realize, and people start to realize about him, that he's a charming guy. He can kind of win over a crowd. He knows people by their face and by their name, and it's things that work for him. And of course, this is going to do him well in his life of politics coming up, because it's important to be able to recognize people at a glance and be able to win them over with your charm.
Yeah, and charm's what you need, especially when you're involved in New Hampshire politics, because though she be small, she is fierce. And that is the case with New Hampshire politics. Continues to this day, right? The New Hampshire primary. That's a pretty important thing. So state politics is definitely a reflection on national politics. And in the 1820s, that was definitely the case. You had your people who were supportive of Andy Jack. And for those of you who don't regularly listen to the podcast, that's Andrew Jackson, who kind of was important in the 1820s. I digress. Anyway, you had people who were very supportive of Andy Jack, and then you had people who were supportive of the Q, and that is John Quincy Adams. So the Pierce family, and namely Benjamin Pierce, so Franklin's dad, was very supportive of Andy Jack, and they became known as prominent in Democratic politics. So Franklin wins his first election in Hillsborough as the town moderator, and he gets elected in that position for 6 consecutive years. And his dad was elected as the governor of New Hampshire as a Democrat in the late 1820s.
So like Jason mentioned, Pierce goes out and campaigns for Jackson, and he ends up winning in that election. And the Democratic Party is really getting stronger. And Pierce is like, I'm going to run for a little better, bigger seat. And he ends up running for the New Hampshire House of Representatives. And his father, again, gets elected as governor. So they're continuing this trend of being involved in politics. And yeah, here in New Hampshire, it's important. And so Franklin continues to charm people. He continues to move up through the ranks. He becomes the Speaker of the House there in New Hampshire as well. And he's really getting out there and telling people what he believes and talking about how he's opposed to banking being expanded. He really wants to protect the militia of the states. He wants to support the national scene. Jackson needs to be reelected, therefore we need to get him reelected. And so Franklin Pierce continues to be a strong and important voice in that time period. While he is in doing those things, he's also a member of the state militia. He ends up being a colonel and then a brigadier general in the army. And this is during the Mexican-American War, which we just had a couple episodes that dealt with things around the Mexican-American War. So go back a couple episodes and listen to those. But he's really interested in not only being a part of the militia, but also making the militias better. It's been a while since they've had to activate these. It's been since the War of 1812. So let's go ahead and see what we can do to make them better. So he's constantly go-getter, continuing to do things to better his surroundings.
Yeah, so all the while the Pierce family is becoming very prominent, and Franklin Pierce even rising to become the Speaker of the House of Representatives there in New Hampshire, he gets married in November of 1834. He marries Jane Means Appleton, and her dad was Jesse Appleton, who was a well-known Congregational minister. And the Appletons were Whigs. So they're opposed to the Democrats. That's just what you did. But Jane was not known as being very outspoken. She was pretty shy. She had many medical issues, including tuberculosis and some different psychological ailments. And this is really the odd couple, Ben, because not only are the Appletons opposed politically and really, you could say, religiously, this plays a huge factor later on because she's a very temperate lady, no alcohol, nothing of the sort, won't touch the stuff. And we will discover later on that Franklin does struggle with this quite a bit. Anyway, back to the house. And not the home house, but The U.S. House.
So Franklin Pierce, in November of 1833, gets up, heads to Washington, D.C., and goes to the United States House of Representatives. And they're getting together, their regular session, and Jackson is in the White House for the second time, and everything's going well. The House has a strong Democratic majority. They don't, if you remember, want the Second Bank of the United States to come about, which, as you will hopefully remember from 30 seconds ago, Franklin Pierce is excited about because he's against the expansion of the banking, and they're doing well. I mean, things are going well. And when he's not in Washington, Franklin is still attending to the law practice. He's continuing to be successful in his own right. And there's the issues of the day, such as abolitionism. That's obviously a huge one. And Franklin Pierce is an interesting guy because he considered slavery to be evil, socially, politically, etc. He wished that it didn't exist, or so he said. But at the same time, he says the abolition movement has to stop. If these people keep trying to abolish slavery, the Union's going to just explode. And he was right, but most people at the time, or at least the people we know of now, at the time were saying, well, we have to end slavery or the Union's going to explode. So it really does kind of give you a different view, because no matter what we know now, at the time you have to imagine, well, yeah, if you try to break it apart, if you try to end slavery, you're going to break it apart. So of course you should stop trying to end slavery. Well, that's in some instances, I could see where that's a logical conclusion to the discussion. Of course, it's not the outcome that happened, and certainly not the outcome that was the best, but it's interesting just to see a different perspective, which I'm sure was every bit as reputable and then esteemed at the time.
Yeah, it's so easy for us now to look back on that era and to see, well, okay, the Democrats were the people who supported slavery, and the Whigs, and then subsequently the Republicans, were the ones who were against slavery. This is not the simple answer, and there is no simple answer to it. So there is a reason why you do have Northern Democrats and Southern Democrats and Northern Republicans and everyone in between. And you had, if you remember from back in our presidential election series, you had different parties emerging through this era, like the Know Nothing Party, and you had the Free Soil Party emerging. And all the while, the Q is sitting in the House of Representatives, kind of sticking it to the Democrats. He's sitting there. I cannot get the picture out of my head of John Quincy Adams sitting in the House of Representatives and just talking and mocking his opponents. I don't think John Quincy Adams would have cared for Franklin Pierce.
Also spying on them.
Yeah. Cleverly so. So
there's a story there that you can go back and hopefully research about John Quincy Adams listening to his opponents via echo. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. You can Google it, but you actually just need to go to the Capitol and take a tour.
Oh man, it's so cool.
Yes. So the big thing why we bring up John Quincy Adams in this era here is because if you haven't listened to any of our episodes about Adams, know this, that there was this gag rule in the House of Representatives where basically the Southern Democrats had established, we are not going to talk about the issue of slavery. That's just what we're going to do. It sounds like a good congressional tactic, doesn't it? Well, Franklin Pierce, very much supportive of the gag rule. John Quincy Adams, not so much. I won't harp on it anymore. Are you ready to talk about the Senate career?
Yeah, I think so. So in 1836, Franklin Pierce gets elected to a full term in the U.S. Senate. And right before that, somebody had resigned, and then somebody had filled the rest of the term, and so then the term, you know, basically the seat is open for business, and so he ends up taking it, and he's only 32 years old at the time, which is really young in the history of the Senate, and even now, current day for the Senate, for someone to be 32 years old and in that seat. So it was a kind of a bad time for Franklin Pierce, because this is around the time where his father and his sister and his brother and his wife are all in bad health. And you can imagine that the struggles of helping the country succeed as well as helping his family in their illnesses weighed on him mentally and other ways as well. And then there's the fact that when Pierce gets into the Senate, it's a bad time in the U.S. There's economic crisis. The Panic of 1837 is started, which we've talked about it before. And again, he points back to the growth of the banking system, because he says that it grew too fast. And when you have too much speculation, too much spending, you're, of course, not going to be able to support the bank loans that are coming about. So he is very supportive of Martin Van Buren, who is the newly elected Democratic president, and a lot of their plans. And that's also going to come back in the future to who he supports, who he doesn't support. That plays a big part in his later career here.
Yeah. During this time, too, while he's a senator, and this isn't the first time that Nathaniel Hawthorne pops into the scene in Franklin Pierce's life, but do know this, that Hawthorne was a very close friend of Franklin Pierce. Probably when you're talking about legacy, and this might be jumping the gun just a little bit, but Nathaniel Hawthorne was probably Pierce's biggest fan and might have been his closest friend when you consider all of the tragedies and so on that are going to happen in his future. But Ben, I have to tell you something. I have never told you this story.
Uh-oh.
House of Seven Gables. Have you heard of that book?
Yeah.
Nathaniel Hawthorne. Every time I hear about that book, I twitch just a little bit.
Yeah.
Because in sixth grade, my teacher, like, I don't even know. Did we divide up in classes? I guess we did, into English class in sixth grade. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
The teacher hands out The House of Seven Gables to every student and is like, here, read this. And there's nothing abridged to it. It's small print. It's several hundred pages long. And we were supposed to read it.
Wow.
And so whenever I hear Nathaniel Hawthorne, I think House of Seven Gables, which is an actual house in New England, I twitch a little bit, and it really had a negative impression on me. So if you're teaching sixth graders, please don't give them that book, because it'll kill many a spirit in your class.
And then someday they'll get a podcast and talk about it on there.
It's horrible, Ben.
Was this a common reaction for you when it came to reading books, or was it just this one in particular?
Just this one, because, I mean, we're middle 1800s writing. I think maybe a sixth grader in the, you know, 19th century would may have been able to read it just fine, but not for this 20th century kid.
So whenever I was in middle school and high school and elementary, I guess, too, I remember when the teacher would tell us we had a reading assignment, all my friends groaning. And I don't mean like reading in your book, you know, in your textbook, that's boring. But like, if here's a novel or whatever or something, go read it. I would actually like have to hide my excitement, because I love to read, and all my friends would be like, this is terrible. And I'd be like, nice, I can read, and it's part of my homework, which means I can't get in trouble for reading too much. Not that I was discouraged from reading, but it was like, quit reading and do your chores kind of sometimes, as opposed to, well, this is my homework, sorry, I have to read. It was pretty great.
Yeah, just hand that book to an 11-year-old and ask them. It's not good. Yeah. Anyway, sorry about that rabbit trail, but now you know.
I'm not sorry about it. I'm glad it happened.
Good. We need some comic relief of some sort.
Okay, so Van Buren is up for re-election, and this is the 1840 presidential election. And Pierce is like, yeah, Van Buren, like him. He's a nice guy, really good leader. So he campaigns a lot throughout New Hampshire for Van Buren. And Van Buren ends up winning New Hampshire, but he loses everything else, basically, to William Henry Harrison. And the Whigs also get the majority of seats in the Congress. And then, guess what? William Henry Harrison dies a month later. Whoops. We talked about that as well many, many times. So John Tyler becomes the president. And guess what? Pierce and the Democrats and everybody who is not basically John Tyler and a few select Whigs challenge him. And they're, you know, very opposed to a lot of the changes he's making, opposed to the basically what they see as his backtracking their progress in certain areas. And Pierce is like, you know what? I think I'm probably going to just resign from Congress. He's been considering this for a while, but he doesn't think he should run for an additional term. Only, you know, most of the time, people in New Hampshire only really get in for one term because that's the honorable thing to do. So he really doesn't think he's likely to have success getting reelected. So he decides, hey, I'm done. I'm going to go back and devote my time to my family, devote my time to my law practice. And he, don't get me wrong, he doesn't want to be out of the public eye. He still wants to be influential. But basically, I'm done with my public service in this capacity, at least.
Yeah, keeping in mind that his wife, Jane, she's really struggling with depression, maybe some other psychological issues that maybe today would be able to be handled a little bit, you know, maybe she would get some affirmation in today's world that she wouldn't have gotten back then. I don't know. Politics is pretty cruel. Seems like anybody dealing with mental health issues who is in politics is exempt from any compassion. But all of the while, she is very much not wanting Franklin to pursue politics. He's going through the ranks. I mean, how best to describe somebody who's almost like the frog in the boiling pot? He goes from, you know, being involved in town politics to state politics to serving in the House of Representatives to becoming a senator. All the while, she's very much against what's going on. They have a couple of personal tragedies here. They have three sons. Franklin Jr. dies as an infant. He was only 3 days old. And then Frank, their next son, dies in 1843 from epidemic typhus. And it's just a rough life, especially for Jane. Not to mention, she absolutely hates Washington. And as a matter of fact, she hates his estate in New Hampshire. So there's a lot of family issues going on at the time.
Yeah, and Pierce, much to her chagrin, I'm sure, stays involved with the Democratic Party. And he continues to help out with the different issues that arise throughout the time. And why not? In 1842, in June, they're like, hey, do you want to be like in charge of something? And he's like, I guess. So they name him the chairman of the state Democratic Committee. And so he really helps the, you know, the radical side of that party take over the state legislature. And they're not all aligned on all the issues that are out there. But Pierce does really help them take a kind of a marginalized stance on some things and helps them compromise on other things. And really, he's just trying to make parties be unified. So he starts to gain respect in that instance. And then James K. Polk comes along. And he's kind of the dark horse. I mean, we'll talk about him, or we have talked about him multiple times. He comes along in the 1844 presidential election and wins. which really surprises Pierce, but also he's pretty okay with it. They had been friends before that, and he had campaigned for him during that election cycle, even though no one really thought he was going to win. And Polk makes him the United States Attorney for New Hampshire.
So yeah, Pierce is moving through the ranks. It seems like his guys are always winning, and the future looks pretty bright. And we will continue the life of Franklin Pierce in the next episode, starting off with the Mexican-American War, all the way to his ascension as the president.
If you want to help us out in making these what we think, and many of you think, are great episodes, head over to our Patreon page where you can pledge to support us for as little as 11 cents per episode. Go to electioncollege.com/patreon or click the link right here in the show notes. It'll take you over there and you can join our little club.
Yeah, and speaking of joining a little club, here's something that won't cost you one red cent, and that is to head over to iTunes. Whether or not you use iTunes to listen to podcasts, that's kind of where you got to go in order to be recognized. When somebody gives you a review, you move up in the rankings. So if you would, visit electioncollege.com/iTunes and rate the podcast and leave us a review. We certainly would appreciate that. And speaking of appreciation, we appreciate all of you who interact with us over on our social media sites on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Election College.
Thanks, and we'll talk to you next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.